You're listening to How to Succeed in Evil, the novel, written and performed by Patrick E. McLean. For more information, visit succeedinevil.com. Chapter 1. A Lot of Words He Doesn't Know. To the east of Flight 209, the laws of physics are under serious assault. The surface of the ocean parts in a perfectly straight line. Superheated seawater explodes into the air. An impossibility is headed west. This impossibility is a man flying many times faster than the speed of sound. This man never had a chance to study physics. He doesn't know what he's doing is impossible. He just does it. He is called Excelsior. In Latin, the name means ever higher. This impossible man does not know this. To be fair, there are a lot of words he doesn't know. But what good are words in those moments of disaster? The endless stretching instant as the car begins to skid. That high-speed memory that the survivors play over and over again looking for the meaning of it all. What words are equal to these moments? What words are of use? No. Please. Stop. Don't. When the wheels lose traction and you look over at the innocent eyes in the car seat next to you, there are no words. And this is where he is asked to go, this Excelsior. This is where he lives. Do we expect eloquence from the avalanche? From a mighty rocket? From the forces that shift the continents? No. We expect action, power, undeniable. And this is what his powers have made him, a force of nature with the will of a man. To be sure, there are other heroes, other people with exceptional powers who have been called to help their fellow and, must be admitted, lesser men and women. Some are colorful. Some are more eloquent. But Excelsior has always been the most powerful. In a perfect world, Excelsior would race towards Flight 209 with a full heart, with humility, with fear, with angry tears in his eyes at the injustice of it all. He would be fully aware that each life on that plane was woven into the fabric of mankind. They might be sons, brothers, mothers, daughters, friends, or enemies, but in his heart he would recognize that each was a part of the mass, each one another's hope of redemption, of love, of care. And that when even one soul is cut from the cloth of humanity, the entire garment is weaker, unraveled in pain and loss. In the perfect world, Excelsior would recognize that there are no explanations for tragedy, just excuses that masquerade as facts. But then, if it was a perfect world, planes would not crash. Excelsior is ignorant of all of this. Perhaps he is desensitized. But he flies towards this disaster, as he flies towards all disasters, not because people are at risk. He goes because he has been told to go. For him, heroism has ceased to be the right thing to do. Doing what he's told is the right thing to do. And today he's going because he needs a win. He's been taking it on the chin lately, not feeling like a hero. But what else could he be? He's the most heroic hero there's ever been. He's the first, the best, the strongest. Like as not, there will never be another like him. But for all his power, he is, like anyone else, held captive to his own feelings. And right now, he's excited about a plane crash. Mostly because the last one was so good. It seems like a dream now, but it had been 1944, a different age altogether. A bomber's controls failed and it dropped over New York City. He'd caught the B-29 and laid it down right in the middle of Broadway. Everyone had cheered. He had drank with the bomber's crew and other heroes. He had found a pretty girl, flown her around the island of Manhattan, made love to her in a cloud, and went home to sleep it off. It was a pure win. And a pure win was what he needed to feel himself again, to feel that it all made sense. Now, if he'd had sex with a girl in a cloud, she would get pregnant and sue him for paternity. How had it all gone so wrong? But no more. He knows he will save this day. He imagines the cheering crowds. Some of them will have video cameras. The footage of his rescue will be played over and over again on television and computer screens. He will not just be a hero again. He will feel like a hero again. He will watch himself on TV. When he intercepts the plane, it is at 6,000 feet, spinning and yawing and pitching out of control. Excelsior's stomach churns just to think about being trapped inside the metal frame. He thinks to himself that he has been through worse. But has he? He has never faced certain death. The beach, he thinks. Set the plane down on the beach. That will look good. As the plane continues to fall, he imagines girls in bikinis. the sun glinting off aircraft aluminum, survivors wandering through the volleyball game, trying to figure out why the afterlife looks like Southern California, the strange device on his chest brilliantly lit by the sunset. That's what heroism looks like. But before he dives towards the plane, he fills his lungs and cries, "Excelsior!" He doesn't want there to be any doubt. But then everything goes wrong. The plane is spinning so fast he can't even throw a jaunty salute to the pilot or the passengers. The windows are rolling so fast they're just a blur. And he can't get a hold of the damn thing. He darts in towards the fuselage, and the spinning plane slaps him away with its one good wing. At least nobody saw it. Excelsior gets mad and knocks the wing off. The body of the plane has now given up any hope of lift. It falls like a stone. Behind Excelsior, the remaining fuel in the wing explodes in a bright fireball. It's now or never. No more time for battle cries or salutes. Excelsior dives hard and gets under the plane. His fingers dig deep into the aluminum. Excelsior begins to offer resistance. The plane slows, but not fast enough. He strains a little more. The ocean rushes closer. At this rate, he'll never make it. Rivets pop out of the plane, and he presses harder. It is a physical impossibility to lift something without a place to stand. But he does. The plane slows. But then, with a shriek of rending metal, the fuselage rips in the middle. The tail and the nose slam sharply together, trapping Excelsior in an aluminum sandwich of disaster. He is exempt from the laws of physics, but the plane is not. The fuselage disintegrates in midair. It is disaster. Pieces of bodies and pieces of aircraft are everywhere. Excelsior can think of nothing. Dread and failure overcome him. Somehow, he spies a man in a uniform beneath him. He seems whole. Perhaps he is alive, but the water is so close. He dives again. Perhaps he can still save one. Even one. One would be something. It wouldn't be victory, but it wouldn't be failure. He snatches for the pilot mere feet above the ocean. His grab is good. His fingers close around the man's wrist, and Excelsior launches himself skyward. It is a feeling he wishes he could forget. Through the skin, he can feel the muscles stretch. He feels the vibrating strings of the tendons give way. He feels more than hears, the pop as the shoulder comes free from the socket. The body hits the water at over 100 miles an hour. And for a moment, Excelsior is silhouetted against the setting sun, clutching the arm he has saved. No one will say it is his fault. And the few who know the truth of it will say that he did all he could. But Excelsior knows differently. He is the child of an age that knew right and wrong. And even though he is surrounded by relativists, he remembers that a loss is a loss. He stares down at the slick of blood and oil, watches the aluminum sink beneath the waves. Maybe he won't go to the beach. Maybe he'll just head west for a while, find an unmapped atoll, and hide himself away in shame. It's the only thing he can think to do. But deep down he knows, the next time there is a call, the next time there is another chance to be a hero, he will go. Like a junkie, he cannot refuse.
You've been listening to How to Succeed in Evil by Patrick E. McLean. For more information, visit succeedinevil.com.